I guess I'm going to go ahead and get started. I hope everyone can hear me. As I said previous weeks, first of all, during the presentation, please feel free to use the chat box if you want to send a message. Sometimes I'll answer if I can, otherwise I'll wait and answer when it's appropriate. And then, obviously, at the end of the class as well, I will take any questions that anyone has. So either you can hold your questions till the end, or you can feel free to use the chat thing during the class as well. As we've been discussing for the last couple weeks, we've been focusing on the topic of forgeries, and in particular, in the last 2 weeks, we focused on a particular work and on Chubo's literature general in general, and specifically, we were looking at the Chubo's Besamim Rosh the last couple weeks and discussing its history so on. This week, what we're going to discuss is not we're going to move from the realm of Chubo's and instead discuss a different case of forgery. In this particular case, it deals with one of the Sarim of Shas, one of the sections of the Talmud. And in particular, as we had seen in the case of some of the Chubos, it seems that in the case of perhaps both the Chubos that we'd seen that were particularly susceptible to forgeries, that was the case of the Chubos Hagonim, that is, early Chubos that were not available until the last 200 to 300 years. These were not well known, and what we did have was very limited. In the last 200 to 300 years, there's been an enormous amount of material that's been discovered from the Gaonic period. And it seems that perhaps in light of the fact that it was sort of a hot topic, or one that was undergoing a renaissance in its discovery, people sort of picked that if they're going to use something to forge. As well, there are other reasons, as we discussed, from a theological perspective. They wanted to date certain works to prior to that particular period, and so on. But this week we're going to talk about another area that's perhaps just as obscure for many people, although I guess there's been a recent movement to try to remedy this to a small degree. And that is when it comes to the Talmud Yerushalmi. As everyone is aware, there are two distinct divisions of the Talmud. One was compiled in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, or Palestine at the time, and one was compiled in Babel. The one in Babel is the more commonly studied one, the Talmud Bavli, and the less commonly studied one, as well as the less written one about, is the Talmud Yerushalmi. Now, of both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, when it comes to either section of the Talmud, there are either Masechtos or entire Sarim, entire sections that don't have we don't have the Talmud on them. So, for example, there is no Talmud that we're aware of, and there's a whole discussion whether or not it exists or doesn't exist. When it comes to the Bavli and Seder Taharos, with the exception of Nida, as well as when it comes to the Bavli, there. We don't really have, with the exception of Masechtos Brachos, when it comes to Seder Zrayim, we don't have the Talmud Bavli on that. Instead, for Zrayim, we have the Talmud Yerushalmi only. And when it comes to Yerushalmi, similarly, although it has on Zrayim, it doesn't have on Taharos and Kachim. And there's a question as to whether or not we don't have these particular Starim because there was never a Talmud compiled on these particular Starim, or that we had it at one point in time, however, it's been lost over time. And the particular work that we're going to deal with this week is the Seder, is the Talmud Yerushalmi, Seder Kachim. Now, when it comes to Yerushalmi generally, as I mentioned, generally it isn't studied, and additionally, as opposed to the Bavli, we also don't have nearly as many early sources or textual sources when it comes to the Yerushalmi. So, for example, there is but one complete, or depends on how you define complete, but for most people's understanding of complete, of completion. When it comes to the Talmud Yerushalmi, there's but one manuscript that we have in the world today, and that's called the Leiden manuscript. And it's a single manuscript that we have that's complete or mostly complete of the Yerushalmi. In other words, there's just one. There's no other one. Now, we have some fragments. There are some fragments that are housed in the Vatican. There's a few other fragments. But overall, the amount of manuscript material is incomparable when it comes to the Bavli. The Bavli, there are numerous manuscripts that are available, both more complete and less complete. In fact, for anyone that's really interested, there's two places to go from one. Well, there's more than two, but they're two fairly easy places to go if one's trying to ascertain the correct text of the Bavli. The first place to go is there's a work that compiles various manuscripts, and that is called Diktukei Sofrim. And the second place is, from the perspective of ease of accessibility, is online. The Hebrew University, much as we discussed and we're going to discuss again tonight, they have a phenomenal resource for books online. They also have, you can punch in the daf and the masechta that one wants to find, and it'll tell you which manuscripts are available online for one to actually look at the manuscript online. So from the comfort of your own home or in your pajamas in the basement, you can go ahead and look up manuscripts from across the world when it comes to the Bavli. However, in the case of the Yerushalmi, this is not the case at all. Instead, as I mentioned, there's only a handful of manuscripts that are available when it comes to Yerushalmi. And then, as I also mentioned earlier, when it comes to the Yerushalmi, there aren't nearly as many commentaries of people that have written on the Yerushalmi at all. So it's definitely the more obscure of the two when it comes to the Bavli or the Yerushalmi. Now, when it comes to looking at a Yerushalmi, anyone that uses a standard edition of the Yerushalmi, much like many standard editions, although, again, this is changing somewhat today, at least for the last, 110 years, the standard editions were those of the Vilna Ram Press. And when it comes to the Bavli today, that's still pretty much the standard edition. Most of the editions of the Talmud Bavli today are merely photo offsets of the Ram edition of the Talmud Bavli. And when it comes to the Yerushalmi, it's no different. The standard edition, again, is the Vilna edition of the Yerushalmi. And what's fascinating is, and this isn't limited to cases of that we're talking about tonight, the Yerushalmi, but in general, when it comes to books, and Svarim in particular, people seem to skip over some rather helpful parts of books. And in particular, when it comes to any book, just about from the Ram Press in Vilna, many of them contain fascinating and rather in-depth introductions regarding the subject matter of the book. So even though one wouldn't necessarily expect, for example, the Talmud Bavli to have or need an introduction, or in that particular case, it's actually an afterword, an Achris Dabar, there actually is an afterword that explains how they decided on the text of that they were using, how they were able to obtain various commentaries and so on. The whole printing process, the Ram printers describe in great detail, and there's a phenomenal amount of information there. In the case of Ram, as I said, they were the standard editions for nearly everything. So the Talmud Bavli was the Vilna Ram. The Talmud Yerushalmi is the Vilna Ram. The Medrash Rava is Vilna Ram. The Shulchan Aruch, Vilna Ram. And you can just go on and on. Many of the canonical texts or the texts that people use with a great frequency comes from the Vilna, from the Ram Press in Vilna. And the editors of the press, and in particular there was one head editor that went by the monkier Safan HaSofer, Shmuel Feigenbaum. He was extremely knowledgeable. He actually wrote other works of his own, but he was also an editor in the press, and this actually goes back to the early days of printing, that many times the copy editors and presses were actually well-respected rabbis in their own rights. In this particular case, though, in the case of Safan HaSofer, he was rather learned, but he also tended towards what was it's referred to as a maskilic influence, which essentially means that he probably read secular material and so on. And he was probably, as far as we're aware of, he was totally Orthodox, but at the same time, he was definitely more of a some of these terms are not perfect fits, but let's describe him as modern Orthodox. So be that as it may, it seems that this actually got him in trouble, although he was extremely well-respected, and as we'll see in just a moment, his notes and pervade everything that he edited. So in the edition of the Shulchan Aruch, so there's been, in the last 15 years, recent upgrades to the Shulchan Aruch that they fixed a lot of the problems with the printing. But prior to this, again, the standard text was the Vilna edition. However, this was upsetting to some because in Yerodea, that is in a section of the Shulchan Aruch, there are actually notes from Safan HaSofer. So aside from editing, he had put in, I think it's a grand total of four places, his various notes on the side. So the stipler actually told the Talmud Press, which had reprinted the Shulchan Aruch, to remove the comments of Safan HaSofer because he felt that he wasn't someone whose comments belonged in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what's I guess it makes it difficult for that particular edict to be carried out is, as I said, Safan HaSofer was involved in many of the projects in the Vilna Press, and almost every time that he edited a project, he has some of his notes or he has something that he adds. So it actually requires more than just taking out four notes in Yerodea. Instead, if you really wanted to remove all mentions of him, it would actually be a much more significant project. And what we're looking at now on your screen, I hope you see, is actually the introduction or the Ha'aras HaMatfisim, that is the notes of the printers when it comes to the Talmud Yerushalmi. And as I mentioned, the editors were actually knowledgeable, so they were aware of what we're about to discuss tonight. That is, there was an edition of the Yerushalmi on Seder Kutchin. But if you pull out the standard Vilna edition of the Yerushalmi, it doesn't contain Seder Kutchin. Now again, they were knowledgeable people, so they went ahead and they have to explain this omission. So if you look at the, and hopefully you can see this, it's the second paragraph, the first full paragraph in the top left-hand column of the page. It says, lo hitfasani es harishami lemasechtas beseder kachim. We decided not to print the Yerushalmi that came out on Seder Kutchim, and I don't think that there is a way for me to zoom, unfortunately. And it says that we haven't printed the Yerushalmi on Seder Kutchim, Shiotzilar Miksav Yad B'Shana Tafrei Samachalaf, that was published from a manuscript in 1901, Aidei HaRav Shlomo Yehuda Friedlander, Verifa, which is, I assume, in Hungary, that this Shlomo Yehuda Friedlander published it. Ya'an. Why? Because Sheyotze Orin Ravim Alof. There were numerous people that came out against it. La'omar, and they, Le'omar, to say, in other words, that they claimed, Shehu Mizayef, V'lo Lanu Lahachnes or Shena B'machlokezu. That they claimed that the entire work, work that came out, and I'll show you the work in a moment, that it's an entire thing as a forgery. And therefore, so that we don't get involved in this controversy, we decided not to publish it. So, therefore they don't include it here. Now, what's interesting is, there is a question as to whether or not the Yerushalmi ever had a Seder Kutchim. That's actually the predicate question, because prior to determining whether or not this particular case of Seder Kutchim Yerushalmi is authentic or not, we need to know whether or not there really is such a thing. And of course, this is actually dealt with again in the very, very interesting introduction that's included in the Vilna edition of the Yerushalmi. Now, again, most people just go straight to the Gemara if they're learning Yerushalmi at all, but there's actually a fascinating introduction called Shari Chomos Yerushalayim, which again was written by Safan HaSofer, where he discusses the Yerushalmi generally, and then specifically he discusses whether or not there ever was a Seder Kutchim. And of course, he's not the only one to discuss this. In reality, as he notes in the footnote, in a footnote at the beginning of this particular work, the vast majority of this work is culled from a work devoted in its entirety to Yerushalmi by Zacharia Frankel called Mevoh Yerushalmi, i.e. an introduction to the Talmud Yerushalmi. And there is a discussion amongst various people as to whether or not there ever existed a Yerushalmi or ever existed a Yerushalmi on Kachim. And those that want to claim that the Yerushalmi, that there was a Seder Kachim, point to a statement in the Rambam, and similar statements are found in a handful of other Rishonim, maybe three or four, that says that there were, in fact, five starim. However, we only have Nida from Taharas. So, therefore, they point out that it seems to imply that there were, that from Taharas we only have Nida, but from the other five there was, but we've lost the other one, i.e. Kachim. In other words, Kachim is missing. And there are those that say that it could be that he meant four, not five, or the five is a reference not to Kachim, but to Taharos. In other words, that it was a given that Kachim wasn't there. The problem with assuming that there actually was a Seder Kachim in the Yerushalmi, that ever existed, or at least amongst the Rishonim it was known, is that unlike other cases of literature from Chazal, there are absolutely no mentions, in other words, no quotations from the Yerushalmi and Kachim that can be found in any statement from the Rishonim. So although there is these references to the idea that perhaps there was a Seder, no one quotes a single passage from the Yerushalmi, and actually attributing to Yerushalmi. Now there are a few times, and this is just important to note, that Rishonim refer to Yerushalmi not as a reference to specifically to the Talmud Yerushalmi, but instead a lot of times they use that to refer to various Midrashic literature as well. So therefore, just finding a statement saying in the Yerushalmi it says X, that doesn't necessarily mean, if it's a Rishon saying it, that they're actually referring to the Talmud Yerushalmi. Instead, it could just be a reference to Midrashic literature. So as to the statement that someone says, and see the Yerushalmi on Kachim or Yerushalmi in Menachos saying X, Y, and Z, that doesn't really appear in any of the Rishonim. So it's very unlikely that the Rishonim had available to them the Yerushalmi on Kachim, and not a single one quotes it, because we know that even though many Midrashim or similar literature that only recently we've learned of it, we knew of its existence because it was actually quoted by other Rishonim. So this means that at the very least that in the times of the Rishonim that they didn't have, it's likely that they didn't have Seder Kachim. Now that said, it's possible that it exists prior to Rishonim, but perhaps it was lost. So then you're narrowing the date that it was lost. It seems a very, very short period of time, but obviously you can't necessarily say one way or the other. And again, the discussion about this can be found in the introduction called Shaar Chomos Yerushalayim. In fact, it's an entire parak. It's Shaar Dalet, where it discusses the various portions that are lacking in the Yerushalmi. Now, and in fact, just one last point about whether or not there exists a Rishonim or not. There actually is one statement to the negative. There actually is from one of the Rishonim, and this is actually found in a fragment that Lady Ginsburg identified. And it says, and this is from the very, very early times of the Gaonim, that says, this is from Yehuda Gaon. And he writes, Tedalacha, you should know, Mifnei Ma Ochlin Sircha Beretz Yisrael. Why is it that the Jews in Israel eat a certain type of meat, even though there's a particular blemish? Mifnei She'ein Biyadim Halacha Achas Mitamud Hilcha Shchita Velo Miseder Kachim Kula. Because they don't have a single law from the Talmud, in other words, their Talmud, now we're talking about Jews in Israel, again, those that would have used the Talmud Yerushalmi, from Hilcha Shchita, that would be Masechtas Chulin, Velo Miseder Kachim Kulo, and not from the entirety of Seder Kachim. The Talmud say the Taros Kulo, and they don't have from Taros either. So there's actually an explicit statement to the contrary, that there never was a Talmud Yerushalmi on Kachim. Be that as it may, there clearly are statements from Rishonim, as I mentioned, from the Rambam, most notably from the Meir, he has a similar statement. A version of the letter of Rav Shirgon also implies, again, that there were five starim in the Yerushalmi, therefore indicating there may have been, at some point in time, the Talmud Yerushalmi on Seder Kachem. So, what happened was, is indeed, as is indicated by the Vilna publishers, there was published a Yerushalmi on Kachem. And you can see, hopefully, let me just see. What you have here, hopefully everyone can see, even though maybe you can't read all the words, we'll go through it, is the title page from the Talmud Yerushalmi, Seder Kachem, Chelek Sheni, Mesechtas Chulin, and Bechoros. And this is the title page from this particular edition of the Talmud Yerushalmi on Kachem. And when it comes to this edition, I will actually put up at the end of the class, many of the books that I have, either scans of or that I'll reference here are actually available online, and at the end of the class I'll put up a sheet that has all the links to where you can find this. And when it comes to the Talmud Yerushalmi on Kachem, there indeed are it's available online, and you can look through the whole book if the image on the screen isn't clear. Now, so this is actually the title page, and it says, you can see on top with the two hands, Raz Achadosh, see, this is new, Yotzil Kipam Rishona, Miksavi Ad Yasha Noshan, that this is being published from an extremely old manuscript. This is the first time this has ever been published. So this is the Yerushalmi on Seder Kachem. And then on the back page, on the verso of the title page, it has it in German. And as you can see, this is published by Rabbiner Dr. Solomon Friedlander, who is from Hungary. And so he's a rabbi and a doctor, and he is Solomon Friedlander. Now, if you go back over here to the Hebrew title page, you'll see it has the same name. However, it contains a little bit more detail specifically about his, whether his family background. He says, Shlomo Yehuda, Samach Tes. There's a question what Samach Tes means. I don't want to get into what Samach Tes can mean. I think he used it here as Svari Tahar, or it's a reference to the fact that it's some honorific appellation. Bahagon, Zatzal Hasvardi Mechuna Friedlander. So in other words, so he is placing himself very clearly. He's doing a whole bunch of things to indicate that he is a Svardi. In other words, that he is not from Hungary, although he currently lives there when he publishes this in 1907. And although this is the second chelek, as you can see, it says chelek sheni mesechtas chulin bechoros, we'll see in a moment that this was actually the first volume published, and the second volume came, the first volume came second, and the second volume came first. And as we saw, the second page has the German title page. And then what we have is a dedication page, which follows it, and it's dedicated to three people, all of whom are academics. The first, in rather big letters, is Schneer Zalman Schechter of JTS, and Moshe Gidman of Vienna, and then Shlomo Buber is the final one. And then what he has over here is, and this is what we're going to read in a moment, is in his introduction, and where he describes the history of the manuscript. So, what he's basically done in 1907 is published a work that is perhaps one of the most important publications if we're going 1907, probably in the last 400 to 500 years. I mean, it's astounding that he had this lost chelek, this entire section of the Talmud Yerushalmi. So in order to publish this, he has to explain how he obtained the Ksav Yad. And as we saw in the case of the Vesalman Rosh, sometimes the history can be extremely important. And I realize that it may be difficult to read, but as I said, first of all, you can download this afterwards, or hopefully maybe you can read along as well, if you can see it. And we're going to start from right at Perek Dalet here. Where he describes, after of course he discusses whether or not there was a section of touch him on Yerushalmi, and of course he comes out that there was, without a doubt, because it only improves his chances of acceptance of this thing. Here, in Perek Dalet, he discusses the history of how he obtained the manuscript of the Yerushalmi. And he says as follows, and I'm just reading from the first paragraph, it says, Kvar mi lesi amra v'kol ha-koreh v'ksarah ki b'shnas tafer samach sidarti v'higarti es kol shas Yerushalmi. That I've already, in a prior proclamation, I already noted that in 1900, I've put together the entire Shas Yerushalmi, l'hotzi l'aram pirush cheshek shloma, that I was going to publish the Yerushalmi with my own commentary on it. And in fact, some of them have already been published. So, first of all, this is a lie. He says over here that he's already published, or at least it's a partial lie, in the sense that he says that he has written a work on the entirety of the Yerushalmi, and volumes have already been published. And a few volumes have already been published. Now, in fact, at this point in time, he had only published a single volume. And that was the volume on Euphamus, which is indeed a commentary on Yerushalmi on Euphamus, and it's with his commentary. And he hadn't published anything prior to this. This, of course, was actually only 2 years prior to this. This was in 1905. He had published his commentary on Euphamus, so he didn't publish a few volumes. He had only published a single volume. Asher Sachar Oz Beir Izmir Bechol. I skipped a line here, and he says Kor Yatsmi Taknuzer Shos Higia Miktav Achi Atarani Achoker Eliyahu Samachtes. So he says, after I published my works or whatever, however you refer to it, I got a letter from my brother, another Sparty guy, Asher Sachar Oz Beir Izmir, and he was in Izmir, Turkey. Bechol Rotsos Elu Gam Over. And my brother is a big traveler as well. He travels all around these exotic lands. And my brother wrote to me how he had purchased these books. Svarim, Atikim, Yikari Erech, Me'azvan Hagon Yeshua Benedisti, Zalbal Ste Yeshua Al Shas Yerushalmi. He had purchased works that belonged to Yeshua Benedisti. So now we're going to get the hook, as it was for Yerushalmi, who wrote a commentary on Yerushalmi called Stei Yerushua. Ubesochem Yerushalmi Defus Venetia. And amongst the books that he had acquired was the first printed edition of the Yerushalmi, which is the Venice edition, printed by Daniel Bomper. And Bial Hakirion Hagos Varos Hakol HaYerushalmi Zersham V'sham. And it has Yeshua Benedisti's notes on the side. And he brings various textual references. Many of these comments were eventually incorporated into his commentary, Stei Yerushua. And when he sent me these books, in other words, when my brother sent me these books, I went over them. And he says, I went over very closely. Now, he says, and in this Yerushalmi, he said, he found two letters. So aside from the notes on the side of Yeshua ben Disti, he found two letters. And one of them, the first one, he says, and this is the paragraph, the final paragraph in, let's see, this column. Yerushalmi hanal matzasi shtei mechtavim yikari erech. And I found two very important, very, very important letters. Mechta harishon. And the first letter states as follows. Hine hu arech baharav de Constantinia, which is probably Constantinople. Moshe benedisti mechaber shod pnei Moshe. Rabbeinu, the Rabbani Kila Kadosha Izmir. And it was written to the rabbis of Izmir. And after he gets through all the honorifics, he says, Chazimar, Hai Gavar, Rava, Mari, de Tamuda, de Venema, Rav, Amalas, Rav, Anelam, Yeshua, Benavisti, Echad, Miuchad, basically Yeshua, Benavisti, that we just spoke about. And he says, and he says that he was the one that gave him Smicha. V'amalach al-dayit zomtar, and he says that v'hi kizakin Yeshua mishmehu de zachal agapra de mari ser v'gilgul z'chusa zakai ki Yeshua ki kan nimsa v'kan ha-yachad me'anusi Portugal hanel amdan Avram Halevi. So Yeshua ben Aristi met this guy who had fled from Portugal. Shav elo kav v'chol nafsho v'libo v'yav lizvon ir v'hiva le'eretz Makarti, the Hachnas Vibriso Shal Avram, the Kipo Lav Das Avos Lav Das Moshe. So this Don Avram Halevi was someone that had converted to Christianity under duress and now came back to decided to return to Judaism. And he decided to do this. The Koama Hanelam El Yeshua. He said, so after this Yeshua Ben Avisti meets him, he says, I want to tell you something. Hine iti v'bama tzeitz ksaviyat kodesh. I have, by the way, I have with me a manuscript. And this belongs to this Don Shlomo Nirvona. The Iskri who the Miskri Nefesh Nitcha Now Bekisva Kodesh Rekomer Pam Halim Alekodesh. He says, and he looked at these, and he says that it had the manuscript included fragments from the Yerushalmi. And specifically, the Gam L'Rabbis Yerushalmi are called Seder Kachim, U'Mesechtas Temura Bechlal, Ahena Eina Einenu Lo Rasa. So what we have here is a statement from Yehoshua ben Avisti, who's obtaining a manuscript from a guy that had fled Lisbon, and now is giving it to him, and it turns out that this manuscript contains the Yerushalmi. And what happened? Yeshua lo mosh mitoch ola ola Moshe. Yeshua ben Avisti sees us. He's amazed. Vayaretz Yeshua el amachna b'shur Torah v'nima. And he says he's thrilled by this find. And he says, therefore he wants to collect money for this. So what we have over here is, and the other letter explains this, that he copied this, that Yeshua ben Avisti made a copy of this particular manuscript. And then what happened was, is so now Friedlander supposedly learns, because remember, in the pile of books there are these letters that seem to indicate that Yeshua ben Avisti, aside from being an expert in Yerushalmi, also had access, although he never, ever quotes or cites to this manuscript, in his work on the Yerushalmi, he had access to a manuscript on the Yerushalmi. So now, Friedlander claims, on the next page, that he now writes back to his brother to try to obtain this particular manuscript. And he says as follows, V'ata, Nira Balio. He says, V'ata Nira Balio, Shaisa B'yadi Arav Ste Yeshua, V'hu Achuz Mereu Hagon Baal Shud Pnei Moshe Rotza La'atiso. That they had it, and they copied it, and they wanted to publish it. However, Ach, so they said that we have to wait, so they never published it. So what does he do? So he requests from his brother to go ahead and try to locate, remember his brother is this guy that travels all around anyways to exotic locales, so one assumes anyways that if there was a manuscript to find, his brother, who no one ever heard of, can go ahead and find it. And he says in the paragraph that begins, B'chag HaShvuos, L'shnas Anal, Higia Mechta of La'achi Shenis, Kizik Tikva Lo'kava Milibo, V'kava Yikava La'hasigo, he says that basically he writes back to his brother, please, please find this manuscript. So he goes ahead and tries to find it. And what happened is that Vahu and his brother found out, Kino de lo biiros v'kfar maderach me'antropolia ad-ir hamalucha dorm harbeg me'yotze yerach hagon hanal. So he knew that in these far-out villages there are descendants of Yeshua ben Avisti. Okay? V'lehem shmiras v'kimiyos al-klafim gedola meis avos avosam. And there are rumors that they have these large amulets that are written on very large pieces of parchment. So, and in fact, although they were treated as amulets, in reality, at least in one case, it turned out that it was actually a responsum, that they had thought that it was an amulet, but in reality was a legal responsum. And so therefore, he decides, kihu kmiya kineged cholerosh. Therefore, it seems that he assumed that maybe they made a similar mistake with regard to this manuscript that supposedly exists about Yerushalmi. So, sure enough, his brother goes and he describes it, in great detail that it turns out that there is a guy named Solomon who has this manuscript, and he thinks that it's an amulet, so therefore he doesn't want to give it up, even though he's somewhat wealthy anyways, doesn't want to give it up, and he has this wrapped up, and so therefore, after a whole long time, he decides he'll lend it out to be copied. So what we have here is supposedly his brother locates a manuscript that was treated as an amulet that was now allowed to finally be copied. And he says how difficult it was to copy. And furthermore, he says, and by the way, this is all a way to insulate himself to a degree, because what he's going to explain now is that he only had a copy of what Yehoshua ben Adisti copied from an original manuscript. And then he's going to copy that copy. But not only is he going to copy the copy, to make it more difficult to figure out whether or not there ever existed a manuscript, he actually says that because of the difficulty in obtaining this, and because the owner wanted to keep it, therefore he only had a very, very short amount of time to spend with the manuscript. So therefore in the paragraph that begins Ka'omer, which is right there, he says, Ka'omer, money lizman katzer ma'od lemalechas ha'ataka, had only a very, very, very short period of time to copy this. Therefore, I was forced to copy this using what's known as the quick copying version. And then parenthetically, he says, what is this? Stenography. So in other words, and then he explains for the reader that that doesn't know what stenography is, which means, of course, that, you know, you only use letters to refer to full words. So now, that's how he copied it. So what this does, though, is that means that if anyone ever asks him to look at this thing, or if there are mistakes in the Yerushalmi, it's very easy to explain them away. Why? Because first of all, this is only a copy of a copy. Moreover, when it was copied, it wasn't like photographed, which would mean at least you had a fairly respectable copy of the original. Instead, it was done in a way that lends itself to errors, that it was done very, very, it was done in shorthand, right? So it was only one or two letters, and therefore one can easily make mistakes when they go ahead and copy it. So this is how he describes the entire background of how he obtained this particular manuscript. So he goes ahead, and he publishes Chulin Bechoros in 1907, and then in 1909 he actually goes ahead and publishes Zvachim and Arachin. And at the beginning of Zvachim and Arachin, he includes for the first time a photograph of the manuscript. Now, if most of the time, and again, this is, I guess, something that people don't necessarily notice, but most books that are published from manuscript today, they actually will include a photograph of a couple pages of the manuscript. And the reason that they do that is because the reader needs to be able to be at least comfortable that what the publisher is providing actually somehow relates to a manuscript, and that manuscript is what they provide as what the manuscript says actually matches up to the manuscript. So obviously they could provide a photocopy of the entire manuscript, but then there are difficulties with that because most of the time it's handwriting and it's difficult to read. So what they do is they'll provide a page or two so at least you can see, you get some sense of what the manuscript is. And most books include that sort of thing today. So Friedlander did the same thing, at least arguably the same thing, in the Yerushalmi. And that's the last page of this particular scan. And you can see that it's a model of clarity here. Tumunos Ksav Yad, Yerushalmi Kachem, Mishnas Tavtov Kufayin Beis. Right? So he says, this is a photograph. This is a picture of what the manuscript reads. And now, although you may think that this is, that you can't read it because it's a scan or the like, in reality, no matter how you look at this, it is an extremely poor copy. So what I'm going to show you is actually an original, and you can see that it is no clearer than what you have up on your screens. I hope, let's see, there we go. So as you can see, it's almost impossible to read anything, and you for sure cannot see what the paper looks like or anything else. It's mainly just, at best, a few letters one can go ahead and make out. So this obviously does nothing when it comes to whether or not this Yerushalmi is actually real. Now, as we had seen with the case of the Tsum Rosh, a lot of times it's very, very difficult to determine whether or not something actually is a forgery or it isn't a forgery. And the Yerushalmi, however, is somewhat unique in that we really know that it actually really is a forgery. And the way that we know this is because there's actually a terrific article written about the history of the publication of the Yerushalmi on Kutchum. And this article was published in a Torah journal called Hapardes, and in the Sefer Yovel, in the Jubilee volume, there's an article that actually describes from someone that was involved in it, about what exactly happened. And what's actually kind of interesting, although I imagine this is not the only case, I'm sure this is not the only case, is that there are a bunch of articles, and that discuss the history of the Yerushalmi. As one would imagine, this is kind of an interesting topic, and many people have written articles. There's around 6 or 7 standard articles on the topic, and each one just about goes ahead and basically copies from the article that appears in Hapardes, and actually there's examples of people repeating the very same errors. But what's interesting is, that there of late has actually been a phenomenal amount of information that we've learned about the publication of the Yerushalmi on Kutchum. And one of the things that we've seen before is that the Yerushalmi on Kutchum was dedicated to Schechter. And the way that it was dedicated to Schechter was because he essentially got funding for the publication of the Yerushalmi. So Solomon Schechter obviously was world famous. He was heavily involved in moving the Geniza fragments from Egypt to England and eventually other places as well, and publicizing the Geniza find. So he was very interested in obtaining, at the time he was already at JTS, and he was interested in obtaining important manuscripts. So Friedlander wrote to him, and Friedlander wanted to get him to sponsor the publication of the Yerushalmi. So, and at the same time, Schechter wanted the manuscript of the Yerushalmi on Kutchum. Obviously, this was a major, major manuscript that would be really important for JTS to have. So therefore, they each played off each other. So Friedlander kept delaying to try to get as much money as he could out of Schechter, and Schechter kept delaying until he was sure he could get the actual manuscript. So obviously Schechter never got the manuscript because there is no manuscript. But that's the reason that Schechter was involved. And the reason that we know this now to a great degree is because there's actually a journal that's published numerous letters having to do with this particular topic, and the journal is Ari Sorel. And basically there's 5 or 6 volumes that have letters having to do with the question about the history of Yerushalmi. But now, turning to how we know that it's a forgery, we're now going to look at the Hapardes article. And this is from Yuxil Yehuda Greenwald, who at the time that he wrote this was living in Columbus, Ohio. Yuxil Yehuda Greenwald should be familiar to anyone that's studied any of the laws or customs relating to mourning. He wrote a book called Kol Bo on Avelus, I think it's probably been translated into English, is a very standard work on the laws and customs of Avelus. And over here he writes, he has an article in Hapardes, and again, I'm going to read it and I'll show you where I'm reading from, but if you can't read it, this again is available online, and I'll post at the end exactly where you can go ahead and download this one. This one in particular is available at Hebrew Books. And in this article, he explains, right over here, right over by the Aleph over here, he explains as follows. Why is he writing this article? He says, "V'anochi nisharti levati. I am alone. I am the only person. Yachid ba'olameinu. the only person in the world, She'eda bebiru shahamotzi la'ar zayef hayusham. I am the only one that can tell for sure that the publisher, Friedlander, forged this Yushami. So therefore, he says, Kol kodesh alai lefarsa ma'ashida. Therefore, it's my obligation to go ahead and explain whether or not this is true. And let me just back up and explain what he means by that. Because what we saw, both in the case of the Samrosh and in the case of Yushami as well, it's very difficult to prove that this is actually a forgery. For example, although the story, this whole story that, you know, that his brother that no one ever heard of was in Turkey, and then he found this, and they were using it, and then it was a copy of a copy, and then it was shorthand and sent to him, and that no one ever has actually seen this manuscript, and so on and so forth. With all that, you know, it's strange, but one can't prove conclusively. Additionally, those that wrote about it, people that questioned the authenticity of Yushalmi, and he's going to discuss them here, they pointed out to the fact that it doesn't seem to fit with other language in other Yushalmis, but again, it's very difficult to say that that conclusively proves that this is an absolute forgery. What we need instead, in order to prove that it's a forgery, many times, either to examine the manuscript, as we're going to see in a moment, or that the person that publishes admits that he never had a manuscript and it was his own work product. And this is one of those cases. And then what he says in the first paragraph, which is after the star, he says as follows, B'shnas tafer samach zayin, in 1907, anokhi yisi bachar tzeil yamim talmid yeshiva gedola b'yerchost, that Greenwald was a student in the yeshiva in Hungary. And it says, Tachas Askachos for Moshe ben Amram Greenwald, and the Rosh Yeshiva was Moshe Greenwald. So he says, what happened one morning? I was a young kid in the yeshiva. Pamachas v'boker, one morning, kasher basi al beis ha-medrash lispal risi orach v'beis ha-medrash im lohaya lo dabar chadrash liros orchim. I saw a guest, even though this wasn't really a remarkable event, there were always people that came, and I'll just summarize what he says. He says that he was struck by this guest, and he asked, who was it? And he says, and people told him, Rav Svardihu. It's a Sephardic rabbi. V'daberak ibris matei ha-Sephardi. And he only speaks Hebrew with a Sephardic accent. L'shoneinu einu makir. And he does not understand our language, Yiddish. And shnei tefillin ha-Rosho. He wears two tefillin, that is, tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam and tefillin of Rashi on his head. Shmo Yehuda Algazi Friedlander. His name is Yehuda Algazi Friedlander. And he's from the famous Algazi family. And he's here, people told me, because he found the single manuscript on Seder Kachin. So he says, Nifamati Mo, Lishmat Ram. I was very moved by this. I was thrilled, he says, and I went over to him, and I heard the whole story, as we just heard, that it was from this manuscript from Portugal, and then he returned to Judaism, and they found it, and this whole thing. And then after Tfila, he says, "Behemshach Tfila lo lakachti einu imenu." I couldn't take my eyes off him the entire davening. And after davening, he goes up to the Rosh Hashiva, and he shows him a kuntras from Yushalmi. And immediately the Rosh Hashiva looks at it, he says, "Veshamano," he looks at it for a while, he says. And then he says, he returns the Yushalmi, the copies to Friedlander, the Rosh Hashiva, and he says, "Chaval, how unfortunate it is. Aksavya hazeh eino ha-Yushalmi al-Kachim." He says immediately that this is not the Yushalmi al-Kachim. And Greenwald, who's writing this, is shocked by this. How could it be that his Rosh Hashiva immediately dismisses this important find? So what does he do, being a kid, and it seems a rather precocious one? He goes ahead and locates Friedlander at his hotel, and he becomes friendly with him. And Friedlander eventually leaves, and he goes ahead and publishes the Yushalmi, as we discussed. And then it turns out Friedlander comes back to where Greenwald is in Siget. And he asks Greenwald to go ahead and help him sell his books. Now he had already published it. It wasn't just, examples. And he goes ahead and he helps him, and he helps him sell, he says, he helped him sell a whole bunch of them, around 60 copies. And then he says, Greenwald hears that people are complaining. A year after it's published, and it was published in 1907, in 1908, he hears that people are complaining that perhaps this isn't actually a real thing. So now he says, and this is the paragraph on page 346, the paragraph that starts Bishnas, Tafresh Samaches, that in 1908, numerous people questioned it. And he says he ended up in the yeshiva of Rabbi Greenwald and in Satmar. And not only was Rabbi Greenwald there, but it turns out Friedlander was living in Satmar at the time. And so he's thrilled. He can renew this friendship that he has. So he goes back and he's friendly with him. And he says, however, he let him have the run of his house. So he says, Friedlander let him look around his library. And he found out that, that in fact, three very important things. One, that Friedlander never was in Asia, and never was Svarad. And in fact, he was from near Vienna, and his name is Zuska. Now, he also points out that what's fascinating is that when Friedlander, and I'm sorry that I skipped this, but when Friedlander returned in 1907 to sell his books, and he asked Greenwald to help him, Friedlander asked him, I can get up and give drushes in Shul, and I'll explain about my book and so on. So Greenwald asked him, well, that's great, but the problem is that you only speak Hebrew with a Sephardic accent. None of the people here are going to understand you. So Friedlander says, no. In my travels, I've learned German, Yiddish. So Greenwald says he was shocked to find Eich Lomad Vigermania Ledaber Zorganias Kedera Halatayim, that not only was he able to speak Yiddish, Friedlander, after only being able to speak in Hebrew with a Sephardic accent, he was able to speak Yiddish with a Litvisha accent. So he points out that one, in fact, he now finds out that he was from near Vienna. He also says that he found that he had written another book, which I'll come back to in a moment, and also that Friedlander had used this another pseudonym in support of his book. That is, he had published books under the name Avram Rosenberg, claiming to be a student of Friedlander, when in reality, Greenwald found out that it was the work of Friedlander himself. So what we have over here is Greenwald's faith in Friedlander is somewhat shaken. But, in order to make a long story short, basically what happens is that the questions about his book become greater and greater. So in fact, at the time, at least according to Greenwald's testimony, he says, remember that the person that had it in his house was this guy Solomon. So apparently a gavir had offered an extraordinary amount of money if anyone could produce this Solomon guy, or anyone could produce the manuscript. And of course, no one could. Not only could they not produce the Solomon or anyone else, but they had sent letters and people tried to figure out whether or not Friedlander's brother ever existed, because he's supposed to be in Turkey. He's the guy that found this thing. So Pisom Kibalti Yudia ki Friedlander Misavil. So Greenwald learns that Friedlander is in Avil. Why is he in Avil? Because his brother died. The brother that everyone wanted to find somehow drops dead, and he's dead. So he's out of the picture. And then he explains that what happened was is that more and more people kept coming out against Friedlander. And in fact, one of the people pointed out that aside from the fact that he wasn't Sephardi and that in reality he was Litvish, also, this was not the first time that he had actually forged something. Instead, he had previously forged, and this is a letter from Tzvi Halevi Horowitz, that he says that that when he was in Klosenberg, Friedlander had been selling an amulet that he had attributed to Rav Yonos and Eichitz. And in this amulet that he attributed to Rav Yonos and Eifshitz, as many people are aware, there was a huge controversy between Yaakov Emden and Rav Yonos and Eifshitz. Yaakov Emden accused Rav Yonos and Eifshitz of secretly following Shabtai Tzvi. So this amulet had in it allusions to Shabtai Tzvi, which of course would settle the issue. And what happened was that he was caught, and it was clear that in fact that the paper that it was written on, that and everything that was written was not old enough for it to be from Yonos and Eifshitz. And in fact, this is why the letter is so damning, is because Friedlander actually admitted that there never was an amulet and that he had forged the entire thing. And now this was published in the Torah Journal, so now everyone knew this, that Friedlander already had a history of forging things. So Friedlander is totally distraught, and he comes to Greenwald to try to figure out what his next move is. And as part of this, Greenwald tells him, look, you need to come out and make clear that this is absolutely not a forgery. But Friedlander is broken, and he says, "Ukfar avra kol aretz vein eifel lebreach." He says, "I have nowhere to go." And this is, again, this is what Greenwald says he heard from the mouth of Friedlander. And he says, "Uvenogei Allah Yerushalmi." And with regard to the Yerushalmi, "Emes hu shezayefti." It is true, I forged it. Lo matsasi ksaviad, I never found the manuscript. Avo koma shekasafti, hema divrei chazal asher lakachti mumkom rishon. Now we get to how he was able to accomplish such a thing. He says, what's the big deal? All the words are really divrei chazal. And in fact, other people have pointed this out, that what he had done, how is it that you can forge an entire mesechta? I mean, that's a pretty big feat. So it would imply that he's a pretty great guy. But in reality, you know, he wasn't. So how is he able to pull this off? So the easiest way to do this is that there's actually a commentary in the back of the Shastoma called Yafei Naim, which attempts to show where there are parallels, Gemaras, between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. So if you want to start out and create a shell of a Gemara, and you want to, let's say, take Masechta Schoolin, for example, so you look in the Yafei Naim and Masechta Schoolin in the Bavli, and you can see where there are parallels in the Yerushalmi and start cutting and pasting from those, and now you already have a shell. And then additionally, what he did was, anytime the Rishonim reference the Halacha, and they're said that there's no source for this Halacha in the Bavli, well, now they can say, well, now we know where it is. It's in this Yerushalmi. So all those statements they can go ahead and do. And then sometimes he says that he just made it up. But what we have over here is the actual testimony from Greenwald that Friedlander told him that, in fact, he had forged the Rishonim. So that would seemingly end the question over here. Now, what's interesting is that even up till today, people still mistakenly believe that this Yerushalmi is actually real. And this seems to be so much of a fear that of late, in the last couple of years, they reprinted this Yerushalmi. And there are actually two versions of this Yerushalmi. One of which is this one, which says Talmud Yerushalmi, and then it says Kachim. Now, there's a second version that this apparently was insufficient because it didn't note anywhere that this was actually a forgery. So instead, there's a second version of it that you can see that it's titled Yerushalmi HaMizuyef, the forged Yerushalmi. So anyone purchasing this would immediately know that this was actually a forgery and not actually the work of, and doesn't actually date back to the time of Rishonim. Now, what had happened, and we don't have the time to get into this, and I hope this was a nice overview of the issue, there were numerous pamphlets printed both for and against the authenticity of Yerushalmi. But as I said, the fact that we have his this particular testimony, that he actually admitted to the fact that he forged it, it's really a moot issue. However, most of these are actually available online, as well as the actual Yerushalmi. So first of all, as I mentioned from the beginning, there's an introduction to the standard edition of the Talmud Yerushalmi, and whether or not there was a Seder Kachim or not, and that's available the first site at the Hebrew Book site. And then, as I mentioned as well, anyone can go ahead and get a copy of the Yerushalmi, either in the reprint that I showed you, the Yerushalmi HaMizuyef, or online at the JNUL site, which is the Aleph 500 site. Now, Friedlander defended himself under the pseudonym Avram Rosenberg, who was supposedly a student, which in reality never existed, and that's a work called Anak Seal, and that's on Hebrew Books. And then the largest, or one of the more comprehensive books against the Yerushalmi is Shalu Shalom Yerushalayim by Rev. Meir Domplatsky, who was the author of the Kli Chanda. And that was reprinted in 1991, and that it has a short introduction as well, and that also is available on Hebrew Books. And then, as you can see, there are two other books. Both of them are very rare. Cherev Milkmas is available on Hebrew Books, as well as Tzid Ramai, which is against is against Friedlander, is also available on Hebrew Books. And particularly the book Cherev Milkmas is the defense of Friedlander. And the person that wrote it, Rafal Gordon, is actually highly respected. And there's some question as to why he would have defended Friedlander. There's some indication that he may have been the one that actually did it and did this because he was being paid by Friedlander. It's unclear. But when it comes to Friedlander, one of the interesting things that the letters that appear in the recent Or Yisrael seem to indicate, although it's never possible to fully understand what motivates people to go ahead and do this, in the case of Friedlander, it seems that he was interested in either covered honor or money. The discovery of a manuscript of this magnitude in theory, would bring, especially if you could produce the actual manuscript, a considerable amount of money and fame. And in fact, when he writes to Salman Schachter a lot, he seems to note, first of all, his need for money, and he writes to numerous people trying to solicit a considerable amount of funds for the publication, so that seems to be one driving force for this particular forgery. Or it could have just been that Friedlander wanted to be respected. He wanted perhaps to get a rabbinic position out of this or the like, and by publishing this, it would obviously boost his status amongst those that care about these sorts of things. So that's a possibility as to why Friedlander went ahead and forged this this Yerushalmi. But again, we don't have any statement explicitly why he did it, but some of the letters seem to indicate those two things, either honor or money. What's just as a final note, what's interesting is that Friedlander may or may not have written another book under another pseudonym, and this is called Sefer HaTikun, and this unfortunately is not available online, it's a scathing work against Hasidim, and what it is written in the it's written as a Shulchan Aruch, and what it is it has the Shulchan Aruch on top, much like I guess the Mishnah Berurah. So the Shulchan Aruch appears on the top over here, and on the bottom is a beer on the halachas, and all the halachas relate to what's known as tikkun. Amongst Hasidim, when a person, let's say for a yard site or the like, people will drink a tikkun. Tikkun is a toast, I guess, is the English version of it, although it's not, it doesn't quite capture what it would be. It typically would be a shot of whiskey or some sort of strong drink. So, and this Sefer HaTikun is written as a parody of Hasidim, and it starts and it's written in the style of Shulchan Aruch. Neimasai hu chayv b'tikkun, and who is chayv in a tikkun? And basically, the point of this is that on every occasion that you can possibly come up with, you're supposed to drink and get drunk, because that's all Hasidim do, is they drink and they get drunk as much as possible. So this was obviously a black mark against Friedlander. And there is some question, as I said, as to whether or not this book is actually written by Friedlander, or it's not written by Friedlander. Be that as it may, there is no question that Friedlander was involved in the publication of the Yerushalmi on Kachim, and the Yerushalmi on Kachim is the perhaps the one example that we can definitively say is a case of forgery in Jewish literature. And again, anyone that wants to read further is welcome to look at either the originals or some of the other books that I put up there. And if anyone has any questions now, please feel free to either, I guess you can type them, or as I mentioned also, if anyone has any questions later, you can feel free to email me at, it's all one word, danrabinowitz@gmail.com. So either you can ask via chat now, or you can feel free to email me later, and if not, I hope to see you next week, where we're probably going to move on from forgeries to cases of censorship in Jewish literature. Thanks.